Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 24, The Art of Letting Go. At Contemplative Inner Being, we offer a 6-session retreat on the art of letting go. This art of letting go is sometimes called the path of descent. Jesus himself exemplified and taught us the path of descent, which Christians have often called the way of the cross. The path downward is much more trustworthy than any path upward, which only tends to feed the ego. Authentic spirituality is always on some level or in some way about letting go. Jesus said in John 8:32, "The truth will set you free." Once we see truly what is trapping us and keeping us from freedom, we should see the need to let it go. But in a consumer society, most of us have had no training in that direction. Rather, more is supposed to be better. True liberation is letting go of our false self, letting go of our biases, and letting go of our fear of loss and death. Freedom is letting go of wanting more and better things, and it is letting go of our need to control and manipulate God and others. It is even letting go of our need to know and our need to be right, which we only discover with maturity. We become free as we let go of our 3 primary energy centers: our need for power and control, our need for safety and security, and our need for affection and esteem. Father John Deere writes about how Francis of Assisi sought freedom in all 3 parts of life. Quote, "Francis embodies the gospel journey from violence to nonviolence, wealth to poverty, power to powerlessness, selfishness to service, pride to humility, indifference to love, cruelty to compassion, vengeance to forgiveness, revenge to reconciliation, war to peace, killing enemies to loving enemies." More than any other Christian, he epitomizes discipleship to Jesus. Francis' logic points the way towards personal, social, and global justice and peace. If each one of us practice gospel simplicity, voluntary poverty, and downward mobility like Francis, we would share the world's resources with one another, have nothing to fear from others, and live in peace with everyone. End quote. We always knew that following Jesus was a narrow gate, as he himself put it in Matthew 7:13-14. But for some diversionary reason, we thought the narrow path had to do with private asceticism, usually in regard to the body, instead of simple altruism, nonviolence, and peacemaking. These virtues would have created a very different society and civilization. But to this day, many Christians feel much more guilt and shame about their private sexual body than about our social body. Much of Christian history has placed the emphasis on making sexuality the entire issue instead of just one issue. This seems to me a massive misplacement of attention. Because of it, the world often rejects any attempt at teaching sexual morality. When you pay too much attention to one issue, you invariably pay no attention to another. Francis of Assisi was moralistic about the right things. Francis was born in 1181 in Assisi, Italy. Already, Europe and the Muslim world had endured two crusades. The Third Crusade began when Francis was a boy, and the fourth when he was 21. In short, the world was obsessed with war, fear, and security needs. Assisi itself was fighting an ongoing war with Perugia, a neighboring city. Francis rode off to fight and was taken prisoner by the Perugians in 1202. In 1204, the Christians of the West sacked and looted Constantinople, which the Eastern Orthodox Christians have never forgotten. Shortly after that, Francis came out of prison dazed, disillusioned, and feeling there must be something more than all of this torture, cruelty, and aggression. Francis seemed to realize that there is an intrinsic connection between violence and the need to protect one's possessions, perks, and privileges. His own father was one of the first generation of propertied businessmen in the new trading class of Europe. One biographer found city records of 12th century Assisi showing that Francis' father was indeed buying up the lands of the poor. Francis recognized that his father's obsession with money had in many ways destroyed his father's soul. And so Francis set out on a radically different path than his father, and in some ways, in overreaction to it. Francis concluded that the only way out of such a world was to live a life of voluntary poverty, or what he called a life of non-appropriation, and to simply not be part of the moneyed class. The rope that Franciscans wear around their waist is a sign that they carry no money, since the leather belt at that time also served as a wallet. Francis knew that once you felt you owned anything, then you would have to protect it and increase it. It is the inherent nature of greed. There is never enough. For some reason, this is no longer considered a capital sin in our capitalistic society. In fact, I've never heard a sermon about the 10th commandment, coveting our neighbor's goods. It's the very nature of our society. One of Francis' biographies, written in his own lifetime, tells of Francis saying, "Look, brothers, if we have any possessions, we will need arms to protect them. And then this will cause many disputes and lawsuits, and possessions impede the love of God and neighbor. Therefore, let us decide we do not want to possess anything in this world." This is a radical idea, and yet we recognize that our possessions tend to possess us after a while. In fact, the more we have, the more true this is. Even so, I've met poor people who are very materialistic. And I have met many people of means who are extremely generous with their possessions. Let us take this moment to practice this art of letting go. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence, be still for 1 minute. a reflection, solidarity. Francis went beyond voluntary poverty in his effort to find the way out of the world of comparison, competition, greed, and the violence that comes with it. He also felt that he had to live in close proximity and even solidarity with the excluded ones in his society. If we are not marginalized ourselves in some way, we normally need to associate with some marginalized group to have an enlightened gospel perspective and to be converted to compassion. We call this the preferential option for the poor. Francis was one of the first to make this practice clear, and this very phrase is now included in the official documents of over 80% of the religious communities of the world. We cannot deny that Jesus both lived and taught this quite explicitly. Francis literally changed sides, changed teams. He was raised in Upper Assisi as one of those who considered themselves the majores, or upper class. In the lower part of town lived the minores, or the lower class. Francis actually moved even further down into the plain below Assisi, where there was a leper colony. The word leper, even in the Bible, is a term referring generally to the excluded ones. They didn't always have the contagious disease of leprosy, but they were the people society had deemed unacceptable, unworthy, or shameful for any number of reasons. On that plain was an abandoned, ruined church, which Francis physically rebuilt. The Porciuncola, or little portion, of the large Benedictine Holdens is the birthplace and home of the Franciscan order. Although Franciscans don't legally own the church each year, on August 2nd, they piously pay the good Benedictines with a basket of fish to be allowed to use it for another year. Members of religious communities usually take initials after their names to indicate their particular order. Franciscans use OFM, Orda Fratum Minorum, Latin for the Little Brothers, or the Order of the Minor Brothers. Francis taught to move down the social class ladder, not to identify with the upper class, nor with the climb toward success, power, and money. Rather, go where Jesus went, which was wherever the pain was. Find your place not in climbing, but in descending. The Franciscan vision is utterly countercultural to the worldview of Western society. To be mendicants or beggars, which would help us be humble receivers rather than consumers and producers. Francis resisted priesthood because he was deeply aware of all that invariably comes with priestly ordination: education, titles, privilege, human respect, income, special clothing. He wanted his followers to be blue-collar ministers who lived close to the people in every way, and not white-collar superiors. However, poor Francis wasn't long in his grave before the church started ordaining as many Franciscan men as possible, who soon wore stiff white Roman collars. It gave access, credibility, status, and stipends in academia, church, and society. I know that it was probably inevitable, and not all bad, but it is indeed dangerous for the soul. A reflection. When you say yes to love, you also say yes to suffering. Franciscan Murray Bodo wrote a wonderful and poetic book about the life of Francis, entitled Francis, The Journey and the Dream. This excerpt from his book captures how letting go, or kenosis, self-emptying, made space within and without, allowing Francis to be filled with divine love that then flowed out in joyful service to the world. Quote, "The demands of Jesus were hard, but to Francis they were love requests, and the harder they seemed, the more elated he was that Jesus should ask him. It was a privilege far surpassing any gift that earthly lovers gave one another." He knew Jesus loved him because he made such terrible demands of him, the most difficult of which were the invitations all through the Gospels to leave everyone and everything for his sake. But the more Francis renounced, the more he possessed, pressed down and flowing over. It seemed that Jesus wanted Francis to give up everything so that he could have the joy of returning it as a gift to Francis. That way Jesus could keep handing back what Francis had first given him, and there would be an eternal effort to outdo one another in selflessness. They understood each other and were becoming one flesh in a manner that man and woman could never duplicate, and that was love as Francis hoped it would be. The paradox in Francis' life was that his exclusive love for Jesus was at the same time inclusive of all humanity. Again, what he had renounced had come rushing down in waterfalls of new capacities for love and giving, and the pool of self was constantly refilled with the fresh and clean water of love that flowed out of Francis in the countless streams of attention, affection, and service of others. The living waters of Jesus had become his own, and he thereby became a reservoir of unselfish love for all creatures. End quote. It is no accident that Francis of Assisi is the first documented person to ever carry the physical wounds of Jesus in his hands, feet, and side, which he did for the last 2 years of his life. These wounds are called the stigmata, or the marks of Jesus. See Galatians 6:17. They surely demonstrate Francis's complete psychosomatic identification with Jesus, both crucified and resurrected. Both Jesus and Francis believed, lived, and taught that we dare not define love apart from suffering. Without suffering, love is mere sentimentality and not nearly enough to save the world or anybody. Let us take this moment to connect with the suffering love. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence, be still for 1 minute. German theologian Johann Baptist Metz offers this question: might the authority of those who suffer bring the diverse cultural and social worlds together? This profound question about suffering succinctly and precisely expresses the religious breakthrough that Christ has offered humanity. True gospel authority, the authority to heal and renew things in people, is not finally found in a heretical office, a theological argument, a perfect law, or a rational explanation. The crucified revealed to the world that the real power that changes people and the world is an inner authority that comes from people who have lost, let go, and refound on a new level. 12-step programs have come to the same conclusion in our time. This kind of inner authority is still part of the essential message for the world. Let go of all fear, of all suffering, all need for power, prestige, and possessions, any need for the small self to be important, and come to know something essential: who you really are in God, and thus who you really are. A house built on bedrock, as Jesus says, Matthew 7:24. Such an ability to really change and heal people is often the fruit of suffering and various forms of poverty, since the false self does not surrender without a fight to its death. If suffering is whenever we are not in control, then you see why some form of suffering is absolutely necessary to teach us how to live beyond the illusion of control and to give that control back to God. Then we become usable instruments because we can share our power with God's power. Romans 8:28. Such a counterintuitive insight surely explains why we are invited into a happy run downward to the place of poverty where all humanity finally dwells anyway. Voluntarily leap into the very fire from which most of us are trying to escape with total trust that Jesus' way of the cross could not and would not be wrong. Trust that His way was the way of solidarity and communion with the larger world, which is indeed passing away and dying. By God's grace, we can trust the eventual passing of all things and where it is passing to. Do not wait for liberation later, after death, but grasp it here and now. A reflection, freedom from the self. Penance is not some kind of dark asceticism, but it is a proactive free leap into the problem ahead of time. Francis of Assisi profoundly understood freedom. It is the same freedom that we see in Jesus when he says, "You are not taking my life from me, I am laying it down freely." John 10:18. In the opening words of his last will and testament, Francis brilliantly says, "The Lord gave me, Brother Francis, to begin to do penance in this way. For when I was broken, it seemed too bitter for me to see lepers, and the Lord Himself led me among them, and I showed mercy to them. And when I left them, what before had seemed bitter to me was now turned into sweetness of soul and body. Afterwards, I waited just a little bit, and then I left the world." His phrase, "left the world," did not mean leaving creation. It meant leaving what we might call the system. Francis left business as usual, and he began what he called an alternative life, which at that time was called a life of penance, or abandoning the system. He decided to live a life focused on alleviating the needs and the suffering of others instead of a life of self-advancement. Most of our decisions are usually based on personal, egoic preferences and choice. This is the life we are called to leave, the self that Jesus says must die to fall into our larger life, or true self. Freedom for both Jesus and Francis was purely and simply freedom from the self, which is precisely freedom for the world. This is so utterly different than our American notion of freedom. In order to be free for life, we must quite simply be free from our small selves. Francis knew that Jesus was not at all interested in the usual sin management tasks that clergy love to think is their job. He saw that Jesus was neither surprised nor upset at what we usually call sin. Jesus was upset at human pain and suffering. What else do all the healing stories mean? They are half of the gospel. Jesus did not focus on sin. Jesus went where the pain was. Wherever he found human pain, there he went, there he touched, and there he healed. Francis, who only wanted to do one thing, imitate Jesus, did the same. But you cannot do that, or even see it, unless your first question is something other than, "What do I want? What do I prefer? Or what pleases me?" In the great scheme of things, it really does not matter what I want. We are not free at all until we are free from ourselves. It is that simple and that hard. Let us take this moment to connect with freedom from the self. with eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence, be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is the welcoming prayer. Francis entered pain and suffering rather than trying to avoid it. This wasn't an act of moral achievement or heroic obedience. It didn't feel like winning, but more like losing, dying, and letting go. The religious word for letting go is forgiveness. Forgiveness is giving up your investment in and identification with your own painful story. This comes from a deep place of inner freedom and awareness of goodness, God's, your own, and the goodness of the person you choose to forgive. I'd like to offer you a form of prayer, a practice of letting go and forgiving, called the welcoming prayer. First, identify a hurt or offense in your life. Remember the feelings you first experienced with this hurt and feel them the way you first felt them. Notice how this shows up in your body. Paying attention to your body's sensation keeps you from jumping into the mind and its dualistic games of good guy, bad guy, win, lose, either or. After you can identify the hurt and feel it in your body, welcome it. Stop fighting it. Stop splitting and blaming. Welcome the grief. Welcome the anger. It's hard to do, but for some reason, when we name it, feel it, and welcome it, transformation can begin. Don't lose presence to the moment. Any kind of analysis will lead you back into attachment to your ego self. The reason a bird sitting on a hot wire is not electrocuted is quite simply because it doesn't touch the ground to give the electricity a pathway. Hold the creative tension, but don't ground it by thinking about it, critiquing it, or analyzing it. When you're able to welcome your own pain, you will in some way feel the pain of the whole world. This is what it means to be human, and also what it means to be divine. You can hold this immense pain because you too are being held by the very one who went through this process on the cross. Jesus was holding all the pain of the world, at least symbolically or archetypically. Though the world had come to hate him, he refused to hate it back. Now hand all of this pain, yours and the world's, over to God. Let it go. Ask for the grace of forgiveness of the person who hurt you, of the event that offended you, of the reality of suffering in each life. I can't promise the pain will leave easily or quickly. To forgive is not to forget, but letting go frees up a great amount of soul energy that liberates a level of life you didn't know existed. It leads you to your true self. Thank you for being with me. May each of us be so fortunate as to be overtaken by God in the midst of little things. May we each be so blessed as to be finished off by God, swooping down from above or welling up from beneath to extinguish the illusion of separateness that perpetuates our fears. May we, in having our illusory separate self, be slain by God, be born into a new and true awareness of who we really are, one with God forever. May we continue on in this true awareness, seeing in each and every little thing we see the fullness of God's presence in our lives. May we also be someone in whose presence others are better able to recognize God's presence in their lives, so that they too might know the freedom of the children of God. Amen.